My name is Julian Finn, that's Oliver Moldenhauer. We will tell you a bit about the TRIPS agreement treaty of the WTO and what that means for us as people who are interested in all sorts of intellectual property rights issues. I want to start with a short overview. We're going to explain shortly what intellectual property rights today mean economically, what the TRIPS agreement actually is. Then we want to talk about a few terms we're using before we're going into explaining what that agreement actually means for developing countries. And then in detail what TRIPS means for software patents, medical agents, and in terms of medical agents, what it means for countries like Brazil and India. And then we're going to talk, or Oliver is going to talk, about the meeting, the WTO meeting that happened in Hong Kong 2 weeks ago, where he attended as a delegate, NGO delegate. To finish with what we demand and a bit of discussion. I'm totally blinded by this light.
Sunglasses?
Entschuldigung. Kann man das Licht irgendwie? Ah, thank you very much. Still blind. Yes, it's the German text, but to explain what intellectual property means, we have a graph of the US exports of core copyright industries showing how much copyright value has risen in the last 20 years, with software being the most important branch there. And also film and video, as well as books and music, basically.
Maybe one point, or we can see how much money we are talking about. These are, for 2002, this are $90 billion. For comparison, the same year, the U.S. paid approximately $60 billion for the oil bill. So actually what they do is they make little silvery discs and in Seattle and use that to pay for the oil they acquire.
Yes. Illustrates a bit better. Copyright or intellectual property industry is actually the most valuable export branch in the U.S., which supersedes chemistry, cars, airplanes, agricultural products, electronic bits, and computers. Or, in other terms, it takes a bit to actually load. No, it just takes a bit. It's a big file. This is a graph that shows the net payments for countries from lower developed countries towards highly developed countries such as the US or Europe. And from 1993 till now, we had a rise by about, well, a lot of percent anyway, too lazy to calculate now. And well, it shows that the low developed countries at the moment are paying something like $9.5 billion every year in copyright and patent licenses towards the Western developed world. So there's actually, well, the money goes out of the countries that need it the most. Yeah. Talking about terms, we don't like the term intellectual property because it assumes that it's actually property you can hold and you can grab. And so if you lose it, you actually lost something. If you copy something, you won't. There's no loss. So property is not the right term. Also, property is mostly used positively. With intellectual property, we have our issues and wouldn't like to use it as positive. Therefore, we decided to use the term intellectual monopoly rights, because if I invent something, the state grants me a monopoly for a certain term on that, what I invented or what I wrote or what I what I played on my guitar. So intellectual monopoly rights is our term for the next, well, few minutes. Yes, short explanation in German, never mind the stuff at the bottom. What the WTO actually is and what carries the WTO, I think Oliver is the best for explaining that.
Okay, the WTO, the World Trade Organization, originated out of the very long series of negotiations in the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. And this started in 1947 and concluded in 1994 and led to the organization, to the founding of the WTO. Every WTO member has to agree to ratify quite a lot of agreements. The most important of them are the GATT treaty on the far left, that's about trade in goods like cars and steel and stuff. The GATS treaty, General Agreement on Trade and Services, which is about services like banks, like the right to build a bank in a certain country, like construction and so on, and which sounds a bit strange because it doesn't seem to have so much to do with trade, the TRIPS, the Agreement on Intellectual Property. And the important thing is that basically all important countries except Russia, and they're in turn, they're negotiating their accession to the WTO, virtually every other country is part of the WTO, including China, including most of the least developed countries, including, of course, the European Union and the United States. This is because if you're not member to the WTO, you lose a lot of trade privileges. So there's a very strong push towards getting WTO membership and thereby ratifying TRIPS. And the TRIPS?
Yeah, the TRIPS is we've said it so often, the trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights. Every WTO member must ratify the TRIPS, which became effective in 1995. And this doesn't mean that countries like, well, least developed countries, had to ratify it in 1995. There are certain transition periods up till 2005. For example, India had to ratify the TRIPS by 2005, 2006, or 2014 for the very least developed countries in Africa. The TRIPS regulates minimum standards for intellectual monopoly rights, such as copyrights, which they're the minimum standard for ratification is the death of the author plus 50 years. Patents is minimum 20 years. Patents on pharmaceutical agents have to be implemented and microorganisms too. Patents are a system sui generis for plant varieties have to be implemented, and trademarks have to be implemented in those countries. And, well, the tricky thing about the TRIPS is that if you violate it, you can be punished by any trade sanctions. So, for example, if I'm a country that, if China wouldn't do so much against the copying of DVDs, the European Union could ban could put import taxes on textiles, for example. On the other way around, this is also possible. The US, for example, still subsidizes cotton, which Brazil doesn't like and won against on the WTO panel. So Brazil now can copy CDs if they want to. Well, it's a bit strange, this kind of thing, because it's not really related to each other. I mean, if I put taxes on steel and some other country therefore wants to put taxes on oil, that's all right. But putting taxes on certain medical agents and therefore being banned for, I don't know. It's a bit strange.
I mean, then that's the main reason why TRIPS is so important. There are many other international agreements on the intellectual property, for instance, the Berne Convention, there's the World Intellectual Property Organization, and so on and so forth. But TRIPS has teeth, you know, because it's part of the WTO dispute settlement mechanism, and you have an actual kind of court where you can be taken to if you violate TRIPS. And this way, we have to look, if you want to see how too strong intellectual monopoly rights can hurt the economy, we have to look very deeply into TRIPS, because that's the most dangerous and most important one.
Yes. I think the largest problem is that TRIPS is the worst deal for developing countries. Developing countries usually only have very low base on copyright or patents. A country like Rwanda wouldn't have many patents on anything. Now they have to implement loads and loads of patents from the Western world, which is new. When Germany developed or when Japan developed, they just ignored patents from other countries, just built their own things in order to export goods. And then when they developed, they suddenly implemented a patent system that was quite strong. Countries like India, Brazil, or even smaller, lower developed countries don't have that possibility. So, yeah, it's like kicking away the ladder. It's countries that are at the top, other countries that want to follow, they don't have a chance. It diminishes the digital commons. Countries that would have a broader common knowledge must now implement stronger intellectual monopoly rights and therefore diminish their common pool on knowledge. It also limits. Well, we also work for the idea of a content or alternative compensation system, content flat rate idea. The TRIPS actually limits the possibilities for these things because it. You have to have certain minimum standards. And, yeah, again, why in the WTO? It's not about trade. It's about other things. And basically, it's about, larger countries opposite to lower developed ones. I think Oliver's best on the next part.
So now we want to go through a few of the especially problematic parts of TRIPS that are discussed currently. One is the whole question of patents on drugs. So that the TRIPS treaty had very long transition periods when it comes to drugs, depending on the state of the country, whether it's a developed country that had before patents on drugs, or at least developed countries, the transition periods ends in 05, 06, or 2014. One example where you can see how strong TRIPS actually is that the patents on drugs are not that new, are not that old. For instance, in Germany, there haven't been any patents on pharmaceutical agents up till 1968. That astonished me a lot when I heard it first. I thought it was something from the 19th century, but it actually worked quite well up until then in Germany. And now we force it onto countries I'm not native to this language, is a lot less than Germany in 1968. So we had that has also a discussion on patents on drugs as a law, as some tradition. We had a big case in 2002 when in South Africa, one of the states where the HIV pandemic is worst, the pharmaceutical companies took the government to court because they allowed South African companies to copy HIV, anti-HIV AIDS drugs. And finally, in the end, it turned out that the companies had to withdraw their case because PR was too bad. I mean, that's too evil if you go and deny people dying of AIDS their very much needed drugs. And this was, sorry, And that discussion led to also a new formulation of the problem inside the WTO. At the WTO ministerial conference in Cancun in 2001, there was an agreement that, no, sorry, Cancun was 2003. Just before Cancun, there was an agreement on how it would be possible to produce drugs and import drugs without paying money, without having to have a license from the patent holders. This needs a little bit more explaining. The very strange thing in the situation inside the WTO is that it is pretty, it's rather well possible to issue so-called compulsory licenses to produce a drug inside your country. For instance, for Brazil or for India or for South Africa, it's rather feasible that they have compulsory licenses, so no matter what the patent holder actually says, the local companies can produce it. But what has been completely forbidden is then to export those drugs to poorer countries, which are actually those which are most in need. In countries like Burkina Faso or Chad or Mozambique, there are no factories to produce high-quality drugs, no matter what patents. So,
closer to the mic.
Louder? Better? Okay. So, and what I said, in countries like Burkina Faso, there's no possibility to produce those drugs. So there has to be a possibility for them to import generic versions, non-patented versions of those drugs. And that's where the WTO was very, very hard against it. And they found a sort of compromise back in 2003 on that, but that was a very complicated process on how you get the possibility to import generic drugs from a different country. So before Hong Kong, the Hong Kong ministerial that took place in the mid of this December, the African Union had proposals how to change this. This was a temporary solution anyway, to make it more simple. That was one of the contested issues in TRIPS, current issues in TRIPS. And, oh yeah. Okay, this is, there's some,
That's a reason, just to illustrate how important it is for countries to have generic drugs if they can't afford others. Well, this is just an example of a certain AIDS, HIV drug. When it came out, the originator asked for $10,439. Then Brazil started to produce it without a patent license and asked for $2,767. And then the originator actually dropped to $727. And now it's about, well, Aurobindo produces it for $209. This is important to illustrate that it's very important for countries to actually be able to buy generics. It's not as easy to produce these drugs at home for that price. And also it's not that easy just to import from one certain country, because if Burkina Faso would have imported it from Brazil, they would have paid $2,767, even though it was easy to get them for $727. Yeah,
Brazil is an example that worked quite nicely. The possibility to issue compulsory licenses. Actually, what they didn't issue many compulsory licenses, but they threatened companies to issue those, so prices went down quite a lot. But this is possible for Brazil, which has a very well-developed pharmaceutical industry. Another country that's very proficient in producing generic drugs is India. India has been the country supplying most of the poor world with very hard, very otherwise expensive drugs, for instance, against HIV in the last years. But because of TRIPS, India had to pass a new patent law in 2005, which made it a lot more difficult to produce drugs. So in the next years, the role that India played up until now is not going to last, because now they have to adhere to the TRIPS regulations on patents on pharmaceutical agents.
Yeah, okay. No, it's all right. I'll just continue. Well, we talked about all this. Basically, it's about the amendment that was made just before Cancun. There was a provisional settlement about the import that allowed countries to import drugs from other countries. This settlement was so complicated it actually wasn't used till now. The way it works basically is that you have to actually tell the WTO you have a problem in your country. Then you go to the WTO says, okay, you are allowed to produce or you're allowed to import. Then you have to ask another country, can you provide me these drugs? If it can't, you have to ask another country. You can't just go on the world market and say, I want these drugs. It's not possible. Which hits? Well, none other than the very poor countries. Also, no export into non-WTO countries is possible, which are still quite a few. There's 201 states or so in the world, and only 149 are actually members of the WTO. The deadline for the amendment elapsed in 2004, and in 2004, end of 2004 and 2005, the African Union proposed a different amendment to make the access easier. Well, just before the WTO ministerial in Hong Kong, there was the big press release that there was now better access for the least developed countries, which meant, well, we made the amendment final. It's the same as before. It hasn't ever been used so far, but still, now it's, well, final. yeah. Yeah.
Your turn.
Okay, so I want to show what has been done on December 6th inside the WTO negotiations. That's, as Julian just said, they just incorporate the current temporary regulations into the TRIPS treaty and made a big PR fuss out of it. It was very cool. Now every problem is solved, but you know, this is the same procedure that has been in effect for the last 2 years and has never been used so far. So it's not very likely that this will help anybody who's in need for cheap drugs. Second thing they made is that they extended the deadline for least developed countries to introduce patents on drugs until 2013. That's a lot less than actually was demanded. The Zambia asked for 2020, which is fits much more within their state of development. and what is also, we've been talking mostly about the impact on the developing countries, but what's also interesting with the whole debate on the avian flu, Vogelgrippe, is that many developed countries, including our own government, said they're never going to import patented drugs whatsoever, whatever the pandemic situation, whatever natural catastrophes, whatever war, whatever, which is a very, very strange thing to say. In effect. Yep. And what is also very important, I think, is to see who is actually playing against the needs of people to access to drugs. And the strongest opponents of this are the United States, Switzerland, and Germany. By the way, this didn't change with the change of government. It has been that way for the last years. And is
it has been since we have a strong pharmaceutical industry, basically. Yeah, that's some nice pictures from the WTO ministerial. While I'll tell you a bit, I think we forgot the software patent slide, didn't we? So I'll just tell you about the software patent thing. Because software patents are not in the TRIPS agreement. TRIPS does not include the patenting of software, whereas the pro-patent lobby always states the opposite. They always pretend that there is that it is regulated by the TRIPS because the TRIPS says technical inventions. Now the problem is technical inventions are at the moment not really regulated in Europe. And that was the whole issue with the software patent debate until a few months ago, and it's going to come again. And The big problem about this is, as soon as Europe adopts these software patents, there will be a strong push into the WTO, into the TRIPS agreement, from the US and Europe towards countries like Brazil and India to also adopt software patents. India, for example, voted against software patents last year. I don't believe they have the same possibilities as soon as Europe also has a software patent law, because then everybody will claim software patents are part of the TRIPS, and there would be a strong force towards these countries to adopt their own software patent law. So there's the link between like medicine and others, and also the in the patent area, also software patents. It's very important to know that the TRIPS can here work as a strong weapon towards other countries like Brazil and India, and therefore it is also very dangerous for their movements towards free software and access to knowledge and so on. We're going to carry on with Oliver's own report from the ministerial conference in Hong Kong, which he attended. Yeah, please.
Okay. Actually, to sum up from the beginning, it was quite strange, because in Hong Kong there's this huge conference hall. There were like, I think, 2,000 delegates from governments, another 2,000 journalists, another 3,000 NGO people, and 8,000 people on the street coming from South Korea, from Latin America, from the Philippines, from Indonesia to protest against WTO. And if you compare this big effort to the tiny part that was actually discussed, it's a bit strange. But coming to what were the hot topics during the conference, I mean, the hottest topics were agriculture and so the opening up of the markets of the North for agriculture, and in exchange, the opening up of the markets for goods, agriculture, and services in the South. But talking about what was important in TRIPS, so one part was the whole thing about biopiracy. Biopiracy is the act where, mostly find us in the act where companies of the North go to southern countries, take plants or animal varieties, take the DNA or extra specimens and patent them.
Do you read your spam mail? Because sometimes you get spam mail with Hoodia cactus products. And that's actually an act of biopiracy, because Hoodia cactus was an African cactus plant, which was then extracted to Europe and patented by some English company, and now it works as a slimming medicine. Yeah, so read your spam mail, you know.
Could you forward me one of these? I didn't get it.
Tell me how your spam filter works, please.
I wouldn't overgeneralize the phrase, you read your spam mail. Can be quite funny sometimes. But coming back to the problem of biopiracy, that was dealt with partly inside the Convention on Biological Diversity, Biodiversitätskonvention in German. By the way, I'm curious. How many of you guys don't speak German? Oh, yeah. Okay. So we didn't go through all this effort without any reason. That's nice. And sorry for my pronunciation. But in the Convention on Biological Diversity, which was formed, which was decided on, negotiated during the Rio Conference, the Earth Summit back in 92, there were two standards enshrined on how to deal with the patenting of biological entities. And one is, these are prior-informed consent. So before you go to the jungle and take some plant out, you have to ask the people whether this is okay. And secondly, benefit sharing. So the actual benefit coming from these plants has to be shared with the people living there where the plants originated. TRIPS doesn't know any of this. Also, most of the national patent laws don't know any of this. You can just go and patent some plant, and and then use it without sharing the benefits. So in general line, the countries of the South, the high biodiversity countries, they demand that it has to be in every national patent law. You have to show that you have prior informed consent and that you have benefit sharing before you can patent some plants. And the current proposal is that patent applicants have to disclose the origin of the material they use to get the patent. And this is sponsored by India and Brazil, Peru, and many other countries. And especially the USA are against this, and the biotechnical industry, saying this is far too complicated, and they don't know where the stuff comes from. And which is kind of hard to believe when you see how much effort they put into it, and that everything that is sampled in the jungle is actually sampled with while you're holding a GPS. You know, that's very important for them to know what they did. So they do have this data, but they don't want to disclose it. Because if you know this certain specimen comes from India, comes from Bangladesh, comes from Indonesia, then you can go there and ask the people, did you get some benefit? And that'll be not so nice for the biotech industry. So that was a big point in Hong Kong. What came out of it was some language that the ministerial conferences is happy that the ongoing negotiations are going to be intensified. So if you're interested in the legalese, I put some paragraph here out of the ministerial declaration of Hong Kong. And this after a whole week of negotiations, they changed the point. Here.
Used to be to intensify his consultative process on all outstanding implementation issues under paragraph 12b.
And this word to intensify is the result of a week-long negotiation on the Indian part. So they kind of claim they reached something, but if you look at the scale of the problem and the point they reached here, it's rather minuscule. Another point, we want to see what our governments are doing. So what do our governments think is the most important thing about intellectual property in the world currently is apparently geographical indications. So that's where the EU was really spearheading the point and putting all their negotiation power in, the one they didn't use to be against drugs. They put it into here. And this is this is especially geographical indications are especially important for wines and spirits, Bordeaux, champagne, whatever, Rioja, all those very nice things. Also for some non-alcoholic parts. So and especially in favor of this is the European Union. Also, what they want is to extend the whole notion beyond wines and spirits. And who's against is New Zealand, Australia, because they haven't such a long tradition. The wine might be as good, but it doesn't have such a fancy name, so they can't sell as much. And so they would like to call the wine also Champagne or Bordeaux. And the same language, identical language as for biopiracy was achieved here. I don't think this is a very important point politically or development-wise. It's just a label. It's not about whether you're allowed to sell the wine or not. But to see what our government is doing there is geographic indications. Also, I want to point out two special things where the trade lawyers are very good in hiding the actually important points under seemingly innocent sounding words. One is data exclusivity. The pharmaceutical industry is very much into data exclusivity. That means the exclusivity of data coming from drug trials. One of the most difficult parts and most expensive part of developing drugs before you can sell drugs is to get permission by some government agency that these drugs are actually doing their job. And for this, you have to do a lot of testing with actual human beings as guinea pigs. Very long, tedious, and also very problematic. I mean, you give people who actually have a bad disease, they give them a placebo to see whether the new drug has some effect or has not. So, but what the drug... Yeah, please. Yes. Please, if there are any questions, just interrupt. Should be okay.
Okay, question concerning the title. Data exclusivity legally is used to deny virtual drugs. Do you mean
generic
drugs?
Vital.
Vital, sorry. Okay. My fault, sorry.
Yeah, maybe it could be put more in focus. Okay. So what drug companies want is that nobody else can use their trial results. So that means if a generic company comes to produce a drug after the extension of the patent or to produce a drug with a compulsory license, they would have to redo all the testing. And this is not only very expensive, this is also highly unethical, because although it is necessary to use humans as guinea pigs in drug trials, it's not a very nice thing to do, and to do it more than absolutely necessary is unethical or just plain evil. But in reality, what's happening is not that they redo the tests, they're too expensive, they just wait until the data exclusivity term expires. Thank you. So this is not part of TRIPS so far. TRIPS says the data has to be private, has to be secret, but if you have a generic drug, you can just say, my drug's the same as aspirin, I don't have to redo the trials, just see that worked, so this is going to work too. But in the free trade agreements, the bilateral agreements that, for instance, US is doing or the European Union doing, they have stronger laws on data exclusivity, saying, for instance, in something like 5 years, 6 years, you're not allowed to use the data, even though you might have a compulsory license, yeah, because you're a country in need and you need vital drugs. Also, it was in the WTO accession terms. Now, every country that joins the WTO can't just join WTO. They have to have negotiations, and every other country already member of the WTO has to agree. So, for instance, for China and Tonga, they had to have special agreements like this. Second nasty tiny thing, non-violation complaints. This is something hardly anyone understands. I didn't understand it before Hong Kong. is that there's the possibility to take countries to the WTO dispute settlement body even though they didn't breach an agreement. this is inside TRIPS, there's a possibility to do this in cases where a country is accused of evading its obligations even without breaching the agreement itself, so by breaching the spirit of the agreement. So far, for this very unclear thing, whatever this may mean, actually, if it comes to court, there has been a moratorium. So all the parties in the WTO agreed that up until now it can't be used. And in Hong Kong, they agreed for another year not to use it, but the US and Switzerland are pushing for it to include it. And this would even more put the whole IP law under the jurisdiction of the WTO dispute settlement body. Questions like, is the IP enforcement in Germany hard enough? What about the Vorratsdatenspeicherung, data retention? Is there enough data retention in the European Union or not? Or is it a breach of American interests if there's not enough people hired in the police? All these things could go to WTO court then. We'll see. That's something where the US is pushing very hard to make this possible in the next ministerial conference in the WTO. So, at the end of the day, what happened in Hong Kong, from the parts that changed in the TRIPS agreement, one could get the impression everything stays the same, and there's a lot of truth in it, because not the important issues has been addressed conclusively. Even though there has been some progress made on biopiracy, it's very, very tiny. But the point is, as we see from the very first slide we had with the data, just because IP law, IP, intellectual property, is getting more and more important, on the way to a knowledge economy, and also because of the deadlines, TRIPS deadlines expiring. Every year, TRIPS is getting more and more important and more harmful to the knowledge commons and to the developing world. And what we would really need was a complete overhaul of the agreement. Many people, most people would agree that back in 1994, when developing countries actually negotiated the TRIPS agreement, they didn't really know what they were doing. I mean, this wasn't about IP lawyers, this wasn't about artists or people from the computer industry sitting there. This was about trade lawyers back then. And if you see how engaged developing countries are now with TRIPS, they would never sign the same agreement again. So what we'd actually need would be a complete overhaul of TRIPS and a downscaling, a very strong downscaling would be necessary. But this is not happening. So unfortunately, the whole thing is actually getting more and more important while it stays the same. And lastly, the so-called TRIPS plus negotiations are happening in bilateral agreements. So for instance, there's a treaty between Iraq and the United States on intellectual property, which was made during the time the government were completely U.S. controlled, and is actually very favorably of intellectual property. I mean, this is just the most extreme case, but also just a new treaty between the U.S. and Peru, U.S. and China on intellectual property rights, and there all the time this is rising standards of IP law, which causes basically net payments from south to north. If you remember the slide at the beginning where we had like $10 billion every year paying from low and medium income countries to the high income countries that way, development aid is $50 billion. So you could say that's almost 20% just going back only that way. And this is just royalties and license fees. This is not copyright. This is not the sale of computer software. So if you want to... just have time for questions. If you want to know more, there's very good information on the webpage ipwatch.org. And for the people proficient in German, you could also go to the ATTAC Wissensallmende webpage.
Thanks very much. This book is available at the Fürbud shop, if anybody wants to spend a few euros.
I would like to ask what would probably happen if one country simply said, okay, we don't want to be a part of these treaties. And and also in a corporate world, if one country does that, some big companies which are originated from that country, I mean, they have subsidiaries all over the world. It's not necessary that their particular intellectual property rights stay with their original juridical person, like a big company which was founded in Germany or whatsoever. Even if a country like Germany would refrain from those treaties, I mean, they could still pledge to use their intellectual property rights from one of their subsidiaries outside, I think.
Well, the main point with the intellectual, well, what if, well, say Brazil wouldn't enforce intellectual property anymore? Well, for example, the U.S. could suddenly put high taxes on whatever Brazil wants to export into the U.S. Yes, but the point is, intellectual property becomes a part of trade wars, so to say. Just as Europe and the U.S. always battle about all sorts of things, they now can, well, they before as well, but they can battle also with in terms of, I don't know, Hollywood films or whatever, which they wouldn't, but they could. So if a country like Zambia would just after bad example because it takes until 2014 until they actually have to enforce it. But if a country wouldn't implement the TRIPS and wouldn't enforce patents, they probably couldn't be able to export any of their goods into other countries, which is more vital for these countries than the intellectual property, even though people are dying just because of that issue. So that's the main point. It's just a part of the whole system. It has become a part of the whole regulations, and it's not very easy, or it's mostly impossible to actually just stand up and say no.
I mean, one important point, I mean, you could say just we ignore TRIPS, we ignore WTO, we leave WTO. But one of the important parts of the WTO is the most favored nation principle, saying that tariff you grant to one member of the WTO, you have to grant to every other member of the WTO. So if you are in the WTO, it's a lot, you get a lot lower tariffs than if you are not in the WTO. So that's the reason why countries are very reluctant to leave the WTO and they're very keen to join and go to great length to join WTO. And the other question, I'm not sure whether I understand completely. Sure, if you have most of the companies originating from one country don't have only a legal personality in that country, have many subsidiaries. So for instance, if Germany would say we go back to 1968, we have no patents on drugs, Bayer would still have patents on drugs in almost every other country in the world, but they would lose it in Germany. But there wouldn't be any difference whether the patent in Germany was held by Bayer Germany or by Bayer US or Bayer Iceland. Is that your answer to the question? There was.
Yeah. So another question. You give a lot of examples of why TRIPS is flawed. I mean, obviously we want to see AIDS drugs going to South Africa. But on the other hand, these drugs are very expensive to engineer. There is a lot of research money. So you need some protection for the pharmaceutical industry. Do you have any solution other than just saying that TRIPS is not the solution?
This would fill another hour to explain why it's not necessary that that there's a strong patent law on medical agents. The main reason is that a large portion of the research isn't done in companies, but it's done in national health institutes in the U.S. or in German state-founded organizations. On the other hand, most pharma corporations wouldn't really be dependent on exporting AIDS drugs to Zambia, but they still it's just a part of their revenue. It's not vital for those countries for these companies.
I think though that you're missing my point. My point is not that the pharmaceutical companies need the money they get from Zambia. The point is that if Zambia can produce the drugs and sell them back to the United States, back to Europe, then that's a big loss.
Yeah, I think that there are two answers to that. One is what we say within the frame of TRIPS is just leave the patents out for developing countries, for the use in developing countries. Definitely, the drugs produced under those schemes in India for use in Zambia, they shouldn't be exported back to the US. But also, and as Julia mentioned, this goes a long story, there are very interesting proposals on how to finance research in drugs without patents. Similarly to the quantum flat rate, there's some system. I just go to Duke Law University, Center for the Intellectual Commons, and there's a talk by Jamie Love as a webcast. Oh, very cool. There you can see it.
Yeah, thanks for compiling all that information in the one-hour lecture, but I'm missing the action part. So what can each of us do? So how can we fight this.
Yeah, good point. let's go to the next WTO ministerial. But much more importantly, I think, is awareness raising here inside Germany and also putting on pressure on our government. Because I don't think it's so well known that our government is actually one of the most evil guys, guys with a black hat, when it comes to actual drug access to poor people. And that's something they need a lot more public relation work to be done. So the possibility is just join one of those groups working on this. There's, for instance...
Us,
yes, yeah. I forgot to mention that. You could go to our webpage and, or also give me your email address. All of you, that would be nice. We have a mailing list, informative, non-low-traffic mailing list on that. But also, if you just talk about drugs, there's a lot of work done by Ärzte ohne Grenzen, our AIDS Kampagne. If you talk about seeds, there's work done by the biopiracy campaign, and so on and so forth. One thing we just came out as an NGO statement on bilateral agreements on undermining access to health. So, yeah. But just get in contact. You can come after the lecture and we just exchange email addresses.
Thanks.
One more question?
Was that a question?
Yeah. Tactically, it's working out pretty well, this WTO thing, no? For the developing countries. I mean, they are getting more force.
They've gone from zero to a little, but it's still absolutely not enough.
But epsilon over zero.
But epsilon very low over zero.
And I don't see it. I don't see that the WTO is working out positively for developing countries. I mean, there has been a lot of change in terms of that it's not only the industrialized countries running WTO anymore. But if you see what's the most important things already had, were decided many years ago, but also if you look at the current negotiations, In the media here in Germany, for instance, there's a lot of focus on agriculture, where the European Union has to pay something. But the pressure on the developing countries to open up their markets for goods from the north is just as high, and they're getting something there as well. But I think we have to kind of clear the room.
Bill? Yeah. Just one question.
Was there another question? Did I hear that? Yeah.
I think it's understood that the exemption clauses need fixing. But, I mean, structurally, from your knowledge, what within the structure of the WTO needs to be changed?
Well, the exemption clauses is just the least thing to do. I mean, it's just...
I think it's the main thing.
Yeah, the main...
You won't be able to abolish the whole system of intellectual property rights.
Well, there's a lot of things to do. The question is how far it can go. I think the TRIPS shouldn't be part of the WTO. It just shouldn't. But the question is what level do you want to achieve? I mean, it's not very possible that the TRIPS is taken out of the WTO next year, but it could be possible that the exemption periods are prolonged. So that's just step by step.
Legal exemption clauses like granting free pharmaceuticals to developing countries instead of changing the whole regime.
Well, it's just a step by step policy. We demand the abolition of TRIPS, but we also, if that's not possible, demand longer periods and better exemption clauses.
Okay. Any more questions? I think we have to clean the
room. We're going to go. Thanks.
Thank you.